Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's that time again. You've got to go to the toilet. There's an incredible pressure in your bladder and you need to get rid of it. Also, the Luke and Pete Show is here. Hello, I'm Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Luke Murr. Sorry for starting the show like this, Luke. I just got a bit excited and I remembered about my own bladder filling up.
I've got used to the ways that you like to start various shows that I've been on with you, and so it doesn't even really register these days. Just get on with it, mate. And to be fair to the listeners, I should probably, in the interest of transparency, tell them that you've tried to start the show about four times already, but I keep stopping you to go and do something. So I'm now finally back in situ. I've got everything I need, so it's partly on me.
Well, the first time you were being electrocuted by something, second time you didn't have your bottle of water.
Yeah.
What's going on in the Moore household? How did you get electrocuted? Why is there a constant threat of electrocution?
The two things could be related, couldn't they? Water and electricity. let me just take the lid off my my Nalgene and I'll tell you. Hang on a sec. There we go. All done.
You sounded like you did you mute your microphones?
Yeah.
I didn't have to listen to it. That's hilarious.
Well, that's friendship, isn't it? That's friendship.
I thought you'd gone off. I thought you'd gone off the line. I thought he's not only taking the lid off his Nalgene, he's taking the lid off the fucking show.
No. Just took the lid off the Nalgene, but I muted my mic because I know how upset you and apparently the listeners get. Although I've never heard a listener complain about it.
As long as I've got a warning, I don't mind the Nalgene. As long as I get a warning, but so, it's just unnecessary.
Yeah, fair enough. So the electricity situation. Basically, I bought an old.
Wire.
Apple. No. I bought an old haunted house.
And yeah.
I bought an old Apple MacBook kind of monitor, I suppose you call it. Is it a MacBook monitor? It's probably just an Apple monitor, really.
Right.
My good friend.
They're expensive.
I know. Well, this is the thing. So I looked into buying a proper new one. They're about $5,000. No exaggeration. They're literally £5,000. Yeah. I thought, I don't want that badly, but I do want one. Anyway, my good friend and all-round legend, John Rust, a.k.a. NTS Radio's John Rust, a.k.a. worldwide touring DJ, John Rust. Shout out John Rust, as he would say.
Yeah.
He had one for sale. And he said, it's a bit old, but you're welcome to take it off my hands if you want and just give me like 50 quid or something for it. And I was like, okay, brilliant. So I met him at Sydenham Station. And because he's like a proper trendy dude, he was standing outside Sydenham Station on his own. He just looked like the world's most shiftiest bloke with a MacBook monitor in a fucking plastic bag. I pulled over. I gave him the readies.
Give him the merchandise.
I gave him a big hug to say, nice to see you. This is pre-COVID, so don't at me. And so I set up the monitor. Now, it works absolutely fine. It's got a load, but the problem is, Pete, it's got a load of, because Apple changed their connection things every 5 minutes, it's got about 14 different connecting extensions before it actually works with my current MacBook. So,
right.
But what happens is, if I unplug it from the MacBook to go in like, to do something else or to take my laptop somewhere else and touch some of the connectors, ooh, I get a bit of a shock.
A little, yeah. It's a not inconsequential amount of voltage going across those, because, I mean, it is, you know, it's video. There's a lot of information getting put across.
Should I be using it or not?
A lot of energy. I mean, it depends on how old the monitor is. I mean, you could have just bought any monitor. I mean,
that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, you didn't have to go for a specific Mac monitor. I'd love to see it though. I'm annoyed that you've not taken a picture of it in the past for me.
I mean, I will send you a picture later on, and I'll share it for those of us listening who are so bored that they would actually look at that photo. But to put it. How old is it? I'll let you be the judge of that when I tell you that when I moved to the back of the house to work a few weeks ago when it was unbearably hot in the spare room, it was so heavy that it took me a lot longer than I expected to get it to the back room. And when I took it off Johnny Rust, the plastic bag was almost breaking it, broke it in two. So it's a very old, very heavy monitor. There's a sticker on the back of it that says it's been inspected electrically in 2014.
So it's been in somewhere in a professional office kind of environment where someone comes around and checks your odds and sods. sounds like he has lifted it.
No
by the
comment.
Sounds of it, dodgy old, old Johnny Rusty Rockets. Yeah, he's there. What are we talking? What connectors are we talking? DVI, HDMI,
all of it, mate. Basically, any connector you can think of is involved. It's even got a Cinema HD Display 90 watt power adapter box that I've got to use as well.
Well, look,
it's
cinema
unreal.
Displays, they are very, very good, but it sounds like you've got a rather ancient one. Hilariously, there was I think £1,000 when they released the new the brand new Mac Pro, the ones that look like a big computer tower. The cheese grater, I think people call it.
Yeah, you like that, the new cheese grater.
It's a lovely bit of kit. Very modular, very interesting, very upgradable, but super expensive. The sort of computer you think the only person who can afford this is Kanye West. And even he was caught pirating plugins for his VST plugins for his whatever he does, Ableton Pro. I don't know how he makes his music, but they hilariously made a stand, just a Visa mount for the back of the monitor to stand it up, £1,000, and so that was kind of like hilariously kind of the mark of why it's a ridiculous product, because the stand for the monitor, not the monitor itself, was £1,000.
How good is the processing power? Not of the stand.
What, on a stand?
No, of the actual, of the brand new cheese grater Apple.
Oh, it's through the roof. It's through the roof, Luke. But
could
you get better processing
power elsewhere from a PC solution?
Yes, you could. And you could get it about £5,000 cheaper, because that's just the way. But you'd have to build it yourself or get someone to build it. And it's, you know, you wouldn't have the Mac ecosystem, and you wouldn't have all of the things that you are used to using a Mac. It's for people who use high productivity Macs. And actually, I was talking about this week, about the whole working from home, the WFH revolution that's going to be happening in this country and pretty much everywhere in the world. People are really excited about the possibilities of, you know, tucking your kids into bed and all that stuff. My problem with it is that the infrastructure in this country... So again, I'm going to make... Look, if I need some kids to tuck in.
You can't
in,
just go around tucking in random kids. I told you that.
I need my commute. I need a reason to get out of the house because I have no other reason. But I was just sort of saying, like recently, I was having a spirited argument with my partner, and she was sort of saying that it's great that we can all work from home and stuff. I was saying it will be great for some people, but if you're in like a data entry job or like a rubbish job where you are just, you know, typing in data, your company is instantly going to have those snooping softwares that find out how much work you're doing, or whether you're on Facebook or whether you're on Twitter or whether you're just on Reddit or whatever all day. And so your life is going to get worse. All of these companies are going to spend all of their time, spend all of their money outside of the electricity and the water and the gas and the rentals of the offices that they've got in central London or central Manchester or central wherever. And they're not going to pass on those savings to you. You're going to be converting part of your house into an office. You're going to be working from home. So that money should be passed on to you. It clearly won't be. And
And if you work in productivity, if you work in like video or images or like us even, sound, producer Katie, who we spoke at length about to her chagrin last week on the show, she couldn't work from home a few times because the internet was just under so much, was getting battered by a housemate. So I don't think we have the infrastructure or the business leaders to make this a successful transition, personally. I think there's going to be a lot of kickback.
I think that you touched on Katie there and some of the people that worked last year are perhaps a bit younger. I remember the thing that I always end up thinking about is that when I first moved to London and first started working, first job I had was at Capital Radio, which is now whatever it is, Global, and it was a wicked place. Like, I came from a small town, doing not much really, and moved to London, found a job, and it was really the making of me, but not just because I was able to get a job, but because of the social activity around it, because you spent so much time with young, interesting, new people, and there were social clubs, and there was things to do, and there was lots of perks that maybe even a bit intangible when it comes to you know, working life. And if people are now going to just sit at home working in their pants all day, every day, and get no real social interaction, a lot of the stuff you said there, I agree with. Some of it I don't necessarily agree with. But one thing I will make absolutely clear is that a huge part of being successful in your career is being able to interact with people socially. It's how you interact with other people. And if you go into a very impressionable age, just out of university, 21, 22, all the way through your 20s, you really start to hone and develop who you are as a human being. And if you're not getting any proper social interaction with new people, all you do is sit at home on the internet, or you hang out with the mates that you've already known from the past, I think that's really sad. And I'm only speaking on behalf of my own experience. I'm sure other people are far more adept at it than I am. But I found that a really, really important part of why I loved living in London. And it would be really sad if we don't get that anytime soon because of what's happened. So there's a lot of other intangible problems with this situation that perhaps haven't been thought about.
Yeah, and I think some people might say, look, if your friendship group is just your work colleagues, then you've probably got bigger problems. But I completely agree. I wouldn't be. Most of my friendship groups have come from work. Well, yeah, Certainly, most of my partners have.
I understand that point, but like ultimately, that's kind of, and I know some people do say that. I'm not having a go at you for saying it because you're right. People will say that. But my response to that will be, look, I'm not some. How I didn't know anyone when I moved to London. I moved to London with three friends. I knew no one else, right? All three of those people now no longer live in London. So the only way I was able to make friends and to kind of develop myself and to pick up, you know, different to be perfectly honest, meeting people from different backgrounds, like different experiences, like people from different countries, different parts of the world. You know, your first access to that is either through some kind of football team or sports team or social kind of group, or it's work. And most people spend, sad as it sounds, 8 hours plus a day at work. So that's where they're going to get a lot of their interactions from. And the social aspect of life in a place like London, and I'm sure it's the same in Manchester, in Birmingham, in Sydney, in New York City, in Moscow, wherever it may be, if that's lost long term, I think that's really sad.
But again, I'm coming at it from the business point of view. I just think we're being asked to.
Pete Donaldson never. That's the first time you've ever said that, guys. I'm coming at this from a business.
Coming at this from a business point of view. Like, we're being asked to turn our houses, our homes, into offices, and you know, maybe you've got a one bedroom house and you've got a family or a partner, and you're both asked to turn part of your house into an office. And it's like, well, there should be some kind of like dividend that you get out of your company for doing that, because they're saving all this money on real estate and, you know, and central London offices and stuff like that. I think there should be some kind of we should be able to live and work where we want, but I think financial recompense.
All I'm saying is that some of my fondest memories after I first moved to London in my early 20s are cancelling agreed social events due to crippling social anxiety. And if some other people don't get that, I will be very sad that they can't also experience that. You know, just the hours I spent thinking of excuses to not do something, that's all going to be lost.
Oh, look, and nowadays, look, all the nightclubs are closed. All of the bars that are late night are closed. Where do you go to make stupid mistakes that you'll regret for the rest of your life?
Could you do that? Never mind converting part of your flat and or home into an office. Could you convert one of the rooms into a nightclub?
Into an illegal rave, possibly.
Have you got to explain what you got up to over the weekend?
Oh, what did I get up to at the weekend?
Organising a 500-strong rave in Thetford Forest. I've seen some of the pictures.
Thetford is a beautiful place to have an intimate get-together. And if I want to bring a sound system in the back of a lorry, I am allowed to do that. What's it going to do? Scare a couple of squirrels? Well, I'm sure the squirrels enjoy the music, the breakbeat sounds that I love so much.
Breakbeat. The breakbeat sounds of people
smashing out the breakbeat.
So for those who haven't seen the story, five people were arrested and fined in connection with a rave in Thetford Forest. It was attended by apparently more than 500 people. Now, I don't think Thetford Forest is that well populated. So I'm fairly certain if the police were doing their job properly, if they were detecting properly, they would be able to see this happening before it actually happened.
And also just kind of like, you know, all right, you know, you're going to need enough drugs to get through to the next day because
you talk about the
police, no taxis. there's no taxis. Imagine how miserable that is. You get to about 2 o'clock in the morning, you're like, I want to go home now. It's like, you can't, you're in Thetford Forest and you can't drive because you're off your head.
Yeah, I remember being a teenager and being dragged along to parties miles away from my house. And I do mean literally miles away. I mean, I remember being dragged to a party. I lived in Gosport at the time, or Leon Solent. I remember, and that's on the south coast, about 8 miles west of Portsmouth. And I remember being dragged to, literally being dragged to house parties in Bournemouth. Right.
Whoa.
That's an absolute mission away. It's hours away, right? And then getting to it, as you said there, getting to like 1 or 2 in the morning going, I don't know if I'm into this, to be honest, but what am I going to do? The first train's at like 6:30. So what am I going to do? Yeah. And sometimes you'd be really into it and sometimes you just wouldn't. And I don't think, mind you, having said that, if you're a teenager, I think a large part of your growing up, as we've just said about social interaction, should be, you know, having to go through there. These kind of experiences. But apparently a large flatbed lorry, Pete, as you've alluded to there, was seized according to police with it had a generator on it, a load of audio equipment, all sorts of stuff. I actually was very impressed by the resourcefulness of the people that organised this. Now, obviously, I'd like to have seen them clean up after themselves and make sure that they left the forest as they found it. But I mean, is it really the worst thing in the world other than the COVID thing, which is obvious? But I know that the legislation has been in place since Friday to stop these things happening due to COVID. So I get that. But put that to one side, there's been legislation in place for a long time, like the Criminal Justice Act and all that type of stuff, to stop young people having a good time. I just find that the essence of that is a little bit mean-spirited, isn't it?
It is a bit mean-spirited. I guess they have to be seen to be doing something. But I also think, what is the difference? I just cannot tell. You walk through the middle of London on a Friday or a Saturday night, and it's wall-to-wall people. And they're not clearing those out because people are spending money. But in an illegal rave in the middle of the forest, no one's really spending money. No one's supporting the economy. No one's drinking out to help out on a Saturday night in Thetford Forest. So if I was going to be cynical about it, I would say there's a little bit of that as well. I think the same reason why we're being quite prohibitive about the places we're allowed to go at the moment without quarantining. And if I was going to be a conspiracy theorist maniac, I would sort of say maybe that's got something to do with the fact that the government doesn't have anything, that doesn't make any money out of people spending money in France or Spain.
Should we do like a proper bit of like tin four hat merch?
Yes,
people
can
put it on
when
they listen.
Yes, exactly, exactly. You can talk about how much money Rolls Royce are making out of the airplanes and stuff. Not being in the sky and the money that the government are having to kind of bail airplane companies out. But
airplane companies.
But I do think that there's a certain bit of me that sort of thinks they'd rather us spend a bit of money in Pret-a-Manger.
How would you go about organising a rave for 500 people in a forest? What would be the first thing you'd do?
Fireworks. Just fireworks. Fireworks. Flares. Fireworks. the three F's: flares, fireworks, and fucking great speakers.
And Thetford Forest.
That's me for that. And Thetford Forest.
Wait, can I also just say, I mean, I don't want to ever go at the police, who obviously do a really difficult job at the best of
the police.
Yeah, and there obviously are some amazing police officers, and they do a really difficult and important job. But I do want to point the following out, though. 100 officers were deployed to break up the event at 11:20 p.m. on Saturday night, yeah? It took them till 6:30 p.m. on Sunday to officially shut it down. Right?
Right.
What have they been doing for 19 hours?
Same thing they do every carnival weekend. Have a little dance with their hats off.
Yeah.
With the locals.
Someone takes a piss.
They're getting involved.
It's all right.
They're having a little dance like they do every weekend at carnival. Yeah, probably a bit of that to me. I was just getting a bit involved. Then they're going, right, lads and lasses, you've had your fun. We've got to break this up. Let's go.
Yeah. I also, £10,000 fine. Would that go straight into the economy, Pete?
Would they pay it, though? I mean, you can sell on the breakbeat speakers.
Breakbeat. Stop saying breakbeat. Why do you keep saying that? I've never heard you say that before.
I don't know. It's been a long day already. It's only three. It's only half three.
Bank holiday as well.
Shall we hit an ad break and get back with some emails?
Yeah, go for it.
Probably something we should be doing. All right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Football's back and we are here to laugh about it.
Hellenius in the League Cup. He was trying to like defend with his hands and he yanked his shorts down.
Straight off. See you later.
Yeah. But Hellenius got the shot away, which I thought was very professional.
Yes. Whether it's players losing their pants or managers losing their shit.
And I thought about that when you could just hear Morty shouting at Pablo Fornal. And then he just loses all sense of himself at the end when Fornal blazes it over. And he's like, oh!
Yeah. That was the noise. Yeah.
The Football Rambler here every day with new episodes covering the lighter side of football.
I walked past a trophy shop at the weekend that said we're only allowing one person in at a time. Nobody wants any fucking trophies, mate. Don't worry, but no one. There's nothing happening.
Also,
no one's achieved.
Null and void. Your five-a-side league is null and void. Piss off.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He went through, and all you hear is
"Shoot, Pablo! Yeah. Shoot!
finish! Finish! Oh.
Pablo!"
This was a Stakhanov production.
And we're back. We're back with the emails, what you have sent. And once again, you've embarrassed, not embarrassed us, you've flattered us. Thank you very much for getting in touch, everyone, on the email hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. Do keep them coming in, though. I can see us running out at a rate of knots, so we do need your correspondence post-haste.
Can I ask a question that is possibly going to get me in trouble with all of our listeners? And Pete, it's a terrifying situation to be in because you are currently the thin blue line between me and the wrath of our listeners, okay? And your memory isn't great at the best of times, but I am sure I trailed an email from J.W. Muller last week, but I can't actually remember if I read it or not. I don't think I did.
I think you did, actually. That's a really good shout. I think you definitely did. So your memory is, once again, top class.
No, but did I read it or not? Is the question.
You didn't read it, no. No.
Oh, okay,
no.
Great. Okay, well, which case I will read it now then. I'm going to have to read it now. Because we talked a little bit about someone leaving dairy products around someone's car, didn't we? And I said, oh, I've got an email here from J.W. Muller, and you thought that I was taking the piss. Remember?
I did. Because of Muller. It just sounds like the bloke who jumped out that plane.
Yeah, that's D.B. Cooper, isn't it?
D.B. Cooper, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, look, for those of you who've listened last week, if I did indeed read this email out, I don't think I did, but if I did, just, it's a great email. Enjoy it again for the second time. It's almost like when a drum and bass DJ does a rewind. Here we go.
Breakbeat.
Breakbeat DJ does a breakbeat rewind. Here we go. Hello, Luke and Pete. Love the show. As a huge fan of the movies Alien and Aliens, I felt the need to defend the levels of technology used by the colonial marines as the brave colonists of LV-426, okay? This is a callback to an episode a couple of weeks ago where you and I took the piss a little bit, out of the technology that an 80s movie thought existed like miles in the future, right? You remember that?
No wireless.
Well, exactly. Well, J.W. Muller goes on to say, which, by the way, his name makes him sound like he is some kind of futurist. He says, the idea that people responsible for the movie in the 80s made poor guesses at what the future would be like is the exact opposite take that I and several friends have on the movie. Several friends, showing off. Instead of guessing that in the future things would be fantastical from a modern perspective and everyone would have laser guns and jetpacks, they took a very pragmatic approach to what heavy-duty military and exploration technology would look like. I actually really like this take. It's a really good angle. He goes on to say, all the technology in Aliens is built to be as rugged and tough as possible. Not only is this practical, but it's true to life. From a practical standpoint, if you're exploring a new hostile environment on a frontier planet, you're not going to show up with fancy touchscreen devices and wireless networks. The atmosphere of planet LV-426 is full of debris that wouldn't be conducive to getting a good Wi-Fi signal. Right. Not to mention the possibility of landing on a planet where the normal radiation could degrade and interfere with the standard frequencies used by your Wi-Fi technology. I understand it is happening in the future, but is it so strange that frontiersmen and women wouldn't bring a wireless network to a future planet when we live in a world currently where a brick wall can destroy your internet connection when you're trying to check Twitter from the bathroom? Beyond that, from a military and industrial standpoint, technology of big, expensive machines and equipment often lags years or decades behind consumer technology. The modern fighter jets in most militaries originally began development in the late 60s. The SR-71 began development in the late 50s. The Colt 1911 handgun was first developed in, 1911, and is still in service nearly unchanged today. The AK-47 was designed in 1948, and even Boeing 747s in commercial fleets still take software updates from 3.5-inch floppy disks. There are no touchscreens on a forklift. The point being that what it's doing, the technology is perfect. It's designed to be as indestructible as possible, not shiny and flash. Not shiny and flash to attract consumers' eyes like a new smartphone that has to be replaced as soon as you drop it on the floor. And finally, in Aliens, there's no instantaneous warp travel or teleporters to beam people down to the surface. To go long distances, the crew has to go into hibernation while the ship runs on autopilot for months or even years. If you're going to trust your fate to being awoken by your ship after years of sleep, you're going to want to make sure it's built to endure more than just having all the fancy bells and whistles. An old, proven technology is going to be more used more than new finicky devices. If my life depends on it, I'm going to trust a monochrome CRT display before I tie my fate to a Bluetooth. What do you got to say about that, Pete?
I'm just saying that modern tractors, which you would probably say were consumer, but in reality, they're probably used a lot by government agencies. Why are tractors, you can't fix them anymore? They have to be fixed by whoever made them. They're kind of locked out. They're software locked out. Mm. You've got to have someone who hacks into the mainframe on your tractor. Yeah. It's a tractor, for crying out loud. So I think that sort of obsolescence is kind of creeping in to business machinery. To big business machinery.
Yeah, similar to my car, though. I remember I took my car in for a service last. The guy just plugged a laptop into it.
Yeah, just did diagnostics.
Back in the day, I would pop the hood and not know what I was looking at. Now I can't even pop the hood.
I checked some oil in a car recently. Yeah.
What do you think of J.W. Muller's take on this, though, Pete? You're a man who's more than au fait with modern technology. How do you feel about it?
I completely agree. But we've talked about this before, like, you know, space shuttles and stuff. All of these machines were built. So, and as soon as you start building one, you've got to begin work on a machine that's not going to pay for another 20 years. These things take a long time and they've got to be tested and tested and tested.
I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before, but if I have, I'm going to mention it again because it's something that I genuinely thought of originally and you don't really get many of those things in my life. So I was thinking that if you took a space shuttle, right? And you said, okay, you're going to sail or fly, whatever it is, the space shuttle to somewhere which is, it's going to take you 100 years to get there, right? So you develop the technology, you take off and you go, and 100 years later, you're going to get there. What happens if in 30 years' time, they develop some technology that's so much faster and so much better that it can get there in 10 years and it just overtakes the people who are already on their way?
Well, you'd be annoyed, wouldn't you?
Bloody annoyed. It's almost like a paradox, though, because you need to develop the first bit of technology to get to the second bit.
Yeah, stand on the shoulder of giants, isn't it? But I would say that's why I don't trust the Teslas and the Richard Bransons of this world to get us to space, because they're all about the new and the shiny and the oh, look at the car, looks a bit different to the old car. I've put a chip in a pig's brain.
What would the pig then do?
I don't know. Ask what his name is.
J.W. Muller.
Tesla.
Oh, right. No. Elon Musk.
Ask Elon Musk. He's put a chip in a pig.
And I read the headline of that, but I didn't read the article. What's the basis of this? Why is he doing this?
He's making a sex doll for the ex Prime Minister of Britain.
Speaking of why are you doing this, do you reckon his wife says that to him a lot? Why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this? I mean, she is Chavirches. So, I mean, she is it Chavirches?
No, she's not. She. It's Grimes, isn't it? He's married to
Grimes. Grimes.
Yeah, just Grimes.
Grimes. Yeah.
Anyway, Pete, have you got an email?
I got an email. Hello to Sriram. Greetings, Mrs. Luke and Pete. I've been meaning to write in regarding this for a while, but life has been getting in the way.
Welcome to our world.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, there was a discussion on the podcast regarding the difference in length of TV shows in the UK and the US, with the general consensus being that the US shows have a ridiculous number of episodes per season. Well, welcome to India, my friends. I wish I was in India right now. It'd be blooming warm and nice, I reckon. Mm. In India, the shows run daily, not weekly, plus there are no concepts of seasons or series over here. This leads to shows having mind-boggling numbers of episodes, routinely running into the thousands. A quick Wikipedia search informs me that the five longest currently running soap operas have, over 3,000, 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, and 2,000 episodes each. I think you can guess at the quality of writing and production from the aforementioned stupendous numbers. Keep up the good work and keep pumping out those pods, Sriram. We're very much like the Indian shows, aren't they? We're a little bit like the old soap operas. But we have that. We have like EastEnders and Neighbours and all those ones, don't we?
I was going to say that. I mean, you can name check and talk a bit about how many episodes so-and-so has all you like, but do you want to know how many episodes Coronation Street's been through?
I think it'll be 4,000.
10,107.
Whoa, that's holy moly.
It first aired on the 9th of December 1960. It's been going for 60 years.
In the same way that a lot of old television, they used to just get rid of the masters and we'd never hear of them again, I fear that those numbers aren't even right. I bet they just lost a couple along the way.
Well, do you remember when EastEnders went for that big crisis because of the advent of HD TV and they basically had to spend a load of money updating all their sets?
Oh, what? Because everything looked a bit shit?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And one thing about that's interesting about Coronation Street, which first, and I'd be interested if any listeners have got a take on this. When I lived in New Zealand, I used to play for a football team, and as much as I was saying earlier, but all my social life really revolved around that football team, and we'd go out for drinks and all the rest of it. And one of the guys I played with, his girlfriend said that when she heard me speak, it really reminded her of Coronation Street. And I was thinking,
oh, right.
But how can it? Because Coronation Street's set in Manchester, and I don't speak anything like her from Manchester, but to her, it sounded the same.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah, just general Englishman.
Yeah, I wonder if people from other countries can actually detect local accent, because I can definitely tell the difference between my wife's accent and my sister-in-law's accent, who is from Alabama. They sound completely different.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of like long-running TV shows, isn't it like, don't they Mexican telenovelas, don't they have, they don't actually ever learn their lines. They just have earpieces in and they just get fed their lines.
Oh, that's wicked. That's awesome.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that's what happened. Have you heard the story about, it's a film. I think it was The Ghost in the Darkness. Have you heard that? Heard of that movie?
Is it, what's his name? A few people have had this. Wasn't Johnny Depp accused of that in his Amber Heard case?
Oh, right. I'm not sure. Oh, no, do you know what it was? It wasn't The Ghost in the Darkness. It was The Island of Dr. Moreau, right? Same year, different movie. The Island of Dr. Moreau is based on an H.G. Wells novel, I think. And I haven't actually seen it for years, but I'm fairly certain it's about this scientist who tries to...
It's the animals.
Yeah, hybrid animals with human beings and stuff, right? And it's got Marlon Brando in it, right?
Yeah.
So Marlon Brando's in it. And it's the mid-90s, so Marlon Brando's long since given up the ghost by this point. He didn't give a shit, right? And he's like, anyone ever asks of him, he's like, fuck you, I'm Marlon Brando, right? I'll just do what I want. He signs on to this movie, and the story goes that he turns up to the set and he's not read a single word of the script and has no idea what it's about. But he's been slated as being in the movie, and it's all part of the press and it's not that. And so what they actually end up doing is giving him an earpiece and just giving him the lines to read. Imagine that.
I mean, I don't care how good your shielding is on your earpiece. You're going to be able to hear that eventually.
Yeah. Imagine it turned a profit, to be fair. So, it's just a bit sad that is like to how the mighty have fallen, you know?
No, look, if you've got that pulling power, just do it. You can just get more films done that way. Why bother learning your lines? Fuck it. Just, you know what? I'll go in the scene. You just move my lips in post. You just do a deep fake on my face and just make my mouth move around.
Actors won't even need to be there at all.
No, exactly. Eddie Murphy's got about 10 doubles. Like he's barely on set for anything.
Apparently, who's that? Sorry,
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, really?
If you ever see the back or the side of his face, he's got these blokes who can really pass for him, like incredible lookalikes.
That's crazy, isn't it? What a level of fame that is. But apparently, I was just reading up on The Island of Dr. Moreau. Apparently, sadly, halfway through the shoot, Marlon Brando's daughter committed suicide. And so he couldn't continue filming his scenes. So he had to fly back to where he was living and they had to completely reshape the movie. But the thing is, and obviously that is really, really desperately sad and really, really upsetting. But, you know, in Apocalypse Now, when Marlon Brando plays Colonel Kurtz, the mad colonel who's gone up the river, up the Mekong and gone off-piste, to say the least. You know, I mean, I've seen interviews with Francis Ford Coppola, where he says, like, or someone, maybe not even him, but someone associated with the movie, saying that, like, you know, Marlon Brando was told, and he knew full well that he was playing an army colonel in the middle of a war, and when he turned up, he was about 400 pounds. But they couldn't film him. They had to film him in the dark from the neck up. So if you watch the movie, his body isn't in the movie because he's too fat.
Yeah, I like it.
I've got a lot of time for that.
Power.
Yeah, but he's still brilliant. It's still a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's about enough. For a bank holiday, isn't it?
I think it is. Let's get over here. We'll be back on Thursday as usual. No rest for us, wicked guys. We'll be back very soon, and we'll be reading your emails out, if that's all right with you. Hello@lukeandpeteshow.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. How can they find us on Twitter?
@LukeandPeteShow. Pete, do you reckon it would be a bit of an odd play from a listener? You know, you just, we'll read your emails out, if that's all right with you. If they've sent them in, it's all right to read them out, isn't it? I mean,
I'm fairly certain.
Imagine not wanting us to read it.
Well, they frequently don't want us to read their names, I know that much, and I rarely don't.
Anyway, we'll see you next time. Have a great week, and we'll speak to you again on Thursday.
A Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.